At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last week's midterm power shift in Washington has put health care reform back in the spotlight, in the firing line, or on the chopping block if Republicans have their way. President Obama says he does not want to relitigate what took so much work to pass. But the fight is on this hour On Point healthcare battle again. And we'll talk with longtime ABC medical man Dr. Tim Johnson about the goals he says must not be lost in the fight. Joining me first today from Washington is Noam Levy, congressional correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Noam, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
We've talked a lot about this over all the time that it was being fought to passage earlier this year. And now we have Republicans in a majority in the House, and they are saying what, Noam?
Well, repeal, repeal, repeal. We hear big promises from House Republicans as well as Senate Republicans to cut off funding for this bill, to deny funding for implementation of the bill, to vote on repealing the whole thing. A lot of big promises to attack the new law.
Let's take the big repeal call first. Can the GOP, with a House majority, repeal the health care reform package that was put together and passed earlier and signed by President Obama earlier this year?
It doesn't appear that they can. House Republicans do have a very large majority, so they almost certainly can have a vote on a straight bill to repeal the law as well as pass it. But because Democrats still control the Senate, it's virtually certain that it would never move further than that. So unlikely it would even make it to the president's desk.
So begin to walk us into how Republicans may try to throw sand in the gears of this reform. And first, on funding, what can Republicans with their House majority do in terms of the funding that will be necessary to implement the health care reforms?
Well, you know, the power of the purse strings is the single largest power that that Congress has, and because appropriations bills start in the House, it is conceivable that House Republicans could attach strings to bills funding the federal government over the next year or two that would attempt to limit funding for agencies that are implementing this new bill, such as the Department of Health and Human Services, the Internal Revenue Service, Department of Labor. These are agencies that that have been staffing up over the last 6 months with new agencies and new offices to write the regulations for this new bill, to process grants that have gone out to states to try to help states plan for the new law. We have seen in the past, most famously, Congress attach restrictions on abortion funding to appropriations bills. So that's a sort of time-honored tradition for Congress to exert its policy will on the federal government's actions. I would add there's one additional vehicle that that Congress has. The very soon in the new Congress, Congress will have to raise the so-called debt limit because the debt is so large. That's a considered a what's called a must-pass bill. If the Congress doesn't do that, the United States government would default on its debts. That gives congressional Republicans some additional leverage, one presumes, with the White House, and we could ultimately see the kind of game of chicken that people may remember House Republicans engaging with the Clinton administration 15 years ago.
How do you read that game of chicken? I mean, that's the entire sort of operating capacity of the country's government if the debt limit isn't pushed up, and unfortunately it looks like it's going to need to be. I mean, how far can that – talk about a nuclear option. How far can that really go? How much leverage does that really represent? Is that a button nobody can actually push?
Well, there's a lot of prognosticating going on right now, and I think it's probably, honestly, premature. There are those who remember, there's those on the Republican side of the aisle who remember the showdown between President Clinton and Newt Gingrich's newly empowered Congress in 1995. And you may recall that Republicans were widely seen as getting bested in that fight politically. They ended up looking silly when they shut down the government, which I might remind people actually was over Medicare and Medicaid, that the House Republicans wanted to restrain funding in that area. So there is some leeriness, I think, on the part of Republican leaders to do that. But you have to remember also there are a lot of new Republicans coming in who were not here back then, who are coming off of a campaign trail where they heard voter anger about national spending. They heard voter anger in some parts of the country, particularly over the new health care law. So I'm not sure that we know exactly how this will play out.
The message from some big conservative Republicans is very sort of all or nothing. Here's Republican South Carolina Senator on Meet the Press over the weekend, Jim DeMint.
We have to stop the funding of Obamacare and over the next 2 years show the American people what the real options are to improve the system we have now. I don't think Americans want to throw out our current system. They want to improve it.
They want to improve it. Here's Nancy Pelosi. This was the day after the Republicans' midterm victories on ABC with Diane Sawyer talking about whether or not the health care reforms will actually be taken apart.
I think they're going to take health care apart. There are certain parts of it that we all may want to review. When we have this debate piece by piece, I think the American people will see how they like pieces of it and how they relate to each other.
Noam Levy covers the whole issue for the Los Angeles Times. He's with us from Washington. And Noam, you write today that a lot of this battle may go outside of Washington. Lots of Republican gains in governor's mansions and state houses, and reform may also hit, it will apparently hit pushback there as well. Like what?
Well, there are a lot of new Republican governors and Republican legislatures who are also ran sort of scorched earth campaigns against the health care law this fall. And while they may not have the power to actually stop it entirely, I think we're going to see a fair amount of pressure from Republican governors to slow down some of the implementation of this bill, particularly the planned expansion in Medicaid programs, which are a cornerstone of the bill's plan to deliver universal coverage. You may see legislatures refusing to act on key pieces of state legislation that are required to create these new insurance exchanges, these new internet-based regulated insurance marketplaces set to go in place in 2014. California was the first state to do that since the bill passed. Of course, Massachusetts already has an exchange that predates the bill. But even in California, it was a major fight to get that bill passed and signed. One can only imagine that lawmakers who may be at the state level, who may be very powerfully averse to the new bill, may simply refuse to act. Now, there are provisions in the law that would empower the federal government to step in states that don't act, which is, of course, not a particularly appealing prospect for a lot of Republicans, particularly at the state level. But there's another few battles, I think, that we're going to see in state capitals around the country in the coming years as well.
Noam, in a lot of locales last summer when this was all being rolled out, we saw a lot of furor against it. Nancy Pelosi's been saying that Democrats can hold hearings of their own on Capitol Hill when they lay out what's actually in the reforms, again, in clear terms for the American public. Americans are not going to want to give those up. What are the Democrats likely to most point to say, you don't want to lose this? Like what, Noam?
Well, you know, it's an interesting phenomenon. The polling has showed, obviously, a lot of ambivalence by Americans about the new health care law, but individual parts of this bill are extremely popular in the 70% approval rating. The ban on rescissions, people being denied coverage, the expansion of tax credits for small businesses to help them provide health benefits. Interestingly, even Medicaid, a program which is often demagogued in Washington and around the country, a part of the American public actually favors expanding that program to help low-income people get health care. There are a lot of consumer protections in the new bill designed to give consumers new protections from their insurance companies, from denials, from getting coverage when they get sick. Democrats tried, I must say, very unsuccessfully to highlight those during the last 6 months, even more during the whole debate. Whether they'll be successful this time around, I'm not sure, but I think we will see them try to do that.
And if the Republicans have success, whether in the next couple of years on the other side of a presidential election, what are they proposing, Noam? What would they like to see happen? I mean, everybody knows the gigantic premium increases, the huge numbers of people uncovered by the way things have been. What's the GOP putting out there?
Quite frankly, not a whole lot. We have seen from House Republicans proposals to tackle things like tort reform, which would place some limits on medical malpractice. We've seen some efforts to deregulate the insurance market a little bit. There was a bill that House Republicans proposed last year that would have done some of these things, but independent analysis of that piece of legislation found, A, it didn't do very much at all to expand coverage over the next 15 years, over the next 10 years. In fact, 10 years from now, the estimate was that the number of people without insurance would be virtually unchanged. And it also didn't tackle this very, very difficult issue of Medicare. Medicare is a huge, looming financial challenge for the federal government. The new health care bill made some attempts to try to restrain Medicare spending. One Republican in particular, Representative Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, who is in line to chair the House Budget Committee, has put forward a program, and there are some Republicans who favor it, which would dramatically change Medicare, make it into more of a voucher program in the interest of making the program more solvent in the long run. It's not a very popular proposal on the left, but even critics concede that it is at least a fully developed program designed to actually tackle that issue.
Dr. Tim Johnson joins me in the studio. He's been covering health care for ABC News since the 1970s. He watched the health care reform bill take shape. Now he's watching the attacks on it. He's become one of America's most trusted authorities on medicine and health care. Dr. Tim Johnson, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Tom.
You've got a new e-book online, The Truth About Getting Sick in America, The Real Problems with Healthcare, and What We Can Do. You're laying out a vision for where you think we need to end up through all this. I think a lot of Americans thought 6 months ago, we got over that hump. There's healthcare reform. We've settled that. Off we go. Do you see this all being undone now, the whole package being opened up again with Republicans in charge in the House?
I'm not a political expert, so I listen to people who are, and most of them, as you know, are saying that probably won't happen. It'll be an attack in small ways, funding ways, other ways. But the bottom line for me, Tom, is that we are still a long way from solving this problem, even with this new legislation. I always start by asking one question of people who think we've got the best healthcare system in the world, as politicians I want to say, which is, why do we spend twice as much per person on healthcare in this country as the average per person cost of all other developed countries, and yet have no better outcomes and are the only country that doesn't have universal insurance coverage? Now, that just makes no sense. It tells us we're spending money in non-efficient ways, even foolish ways, because, again, we spend twice as much, no better outcomes, and no universal coverage.
So the diagnosis there, not too good. What about the health care package that was put through this year? Do you see in it what President Obama and the Democrats pushed through after a lot of struggle? Do you see an answer to the kind of question that you just asked? Why do we spend so much more and have no better outcomes?
Well, the answer to that question is very complicated, but basically it involves two things. It involves unrealistic expectations on the part of us, all of us, as American healthcare consumers. We have been brought up to think we can have everything. We can have the very latest technology, even though it may not be proven to be effective and safe. Mm-hmm. And we can get it at a low price, or our employers will pay for it, or the government will pay for it. We have very little skin in the game. Now, you combine that, expectation with what many now call the medical industrial complex in this country, this army of people churning out new devices, new drugs, new technologies, and you marry those two together and you have a formula for financial disaster. So we've got to be attacking on both sides of that equation in order to begin to solve the problem.
So we had a big round of reforms. How much of the Obama reforms or how much of this fundamental problem that you're pointing to do you think the Obama reforms have been designed to address?
Not very much, to be honest. Now, there are some parts of the bill that are clearly designed to address the cost problem. For example, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation is to come up with new ways of paying for health care. Right now, we pay for health care basically on the old fee-for-service model, which says to doctors, hospitals, device and drug companies, the more you do, the more you make, the more you sell, the more you're going to get in terms of income. What we have to do is shift to a system that starts rewarding paying for outcomes, results, rather than simply doing whether or not it's needed. So there are some things in the bill that try to direct some attention to the current payment system and change it. Another one is the Independent Payment Advisory Board for Medicare. But they're trial efforts, and they're not widespread, and they're certainly not built into the bill or into the country in any systematic way. One thing I'll say, and people, I'm amazed that people don't really get it, except that it's not going to be around until 2014. But the real heart of the Obama bill are these exchanges that we've been hearing about, exchanges
state
at the state level.
State that would explain what they would do.
Well, what they basically do is allow healthcare consumers to go to a spot on the internet or in a booklet that they would get and pick insurance plans that are best for them and their family based on cost and coverage. Now, that's almost exactly like the members of Congress have, the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. And everybody seems to think that's a good idea, including members of Congress. So when we say the Obama plan is proposing a government takeover, that's just not right. What they're really proposing is an insurance exchange program, very similar to the Federal Employees Program, which really gives more business to the private insurance companies. It doesn't take it over. It gives more business, albeit and hopefully in a more efficient, cost-effective way.
So Republicans just won the House, and part of what they campaigned on was opposition to the health care reforms. What do you think the Republicans are representing then when they bring that opposition to the fore? What interests or what perspective do you see in play in the Republican criticism of the reforms?
I think they have been very effective in scaring people, to be very blunt, using things like government takeover when it really isn't at all. And as I've just pointed out, in a way, it enhances the existing private insurance system. Or the classic example, of course, death panels, which were really not that at all. They were provisions so experts could sit down with a family and a patient in final days or months or weeks and counsel them on how best to go through that. In all kinds of ways, they have mislabeled this effort, and they've been very effective at it. And I think unless the American public starts to take the time to find out what's really in this bill and, more importantly, what really needs to be done, we're headed for disaster. If the present cost curve for health care doesn't change at all, most experts say that within 7, 8, 9 years, we would face national bankruptcy. That's how out of line the cost curve for health care is versus the general inflation rate. So we're not going to have a choice. I mean, either we're going to do something that will start to control costs, or we're going to face an absolute crisis.
President Obama said again and again, we've got to bend that curve, that cost curve. Are you saying these reforms don't do it?
I don't think they do it enough. I think they've got some ideas in there that might do it eventually. And if these exchanges work splendidly, which is unlikely, at least for many years, it would help. I'm really nervous about what's coming. And quite frankly, I don't trust the political process anymore. And I'm talking about both sides of the aisle. I think politicians' number one concern is to get reelected. And they will do and say anything to do that, including scaring people about what's really going on in healthcare. So I've come to the conclusion that we really will have to have some kind of an independent commission to help us make the changes necessary, sort of like the commission that Congress had to appoint to close military bases. I mean, they couldn't even agree on closing military bases, mind you. Healthcare is so much more complicated, so much more costly, so much more dangerous in terms of our future.
But who's going to hand over to an independent commission? That would be so political in itself, the membership of it and so on. I mean, what do you think is going to drive radical action on this front eventually?
Cost out of control. I think we will eventually come to a point where we are truly facing national bankruptcy if we don't take action. And if by that time we haven't made some of the major reforms, there are four essential reforms I can talk to you about at some point. But if we haven't done that and the costs are still out of control, I think Congress will have to respond. My guess is at that point they will say, let's expand Medicare to cover everybody. It's an existing system. We know the beast. We need to reform it, but at least we'll get costs all in one place and have a chance of controlling them.
So you may not agree with the Republican, some of the critique of these reforms, but I hear you kind of saying we still got to go back to the drawing board here. I mean, after everything that we went through in that year and a half of debate over this, I don't know who has the appetite for that. Republicans do, I guess.
I wouldn't put it that way. I think there are things in the bill that if we truly develop them and make them work will help, like the exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
They really, I think, are a very good idea, and I think the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program has demonstrated that. And for Congress to stand there and say, we don't want the exchanges when they're doing the same thing for themselves is pure hypocrisy. Some of these commissions I alluded to, if they really can grab hold and do their job and not be weakened by Congress in a political game, they could help. But I'm fearful that that will not be enough. It's not that the bill is bad and you have to go back to the drawing board. I don't think it does enough to control costs, which is going to be a huge problem down the road.
So more to come. Dr. Timothy Johnson is with us. You may have seen him for decades on ABC as their chief spokesman on all issues medical. He's medical editor there now. A little more leeway to give his view, and he's giving it. His new book is The Truth About Getting Sick in America. Let's go to our listeners. John in New York City. John, you're on the air with Dr. Tim Johnson.
Hi, Dr. Tim and Tom. I just want to point out that, you know, throughout all of this, throughout the, you know, this debate, there's been very little offered in terms of solutions, real solutions, by the Republicans. The only thing that I see in terms of, you know, real structural offers is Ryan's plan. And Ryan's plan is terrible. It gives more control to insurance companies. What it offers up with regard to coverage for seniors are vouchers that won't be able to pay for the rising costs that Tim just talked about. It's terrible. So you have that on one side, and you have the Democrats trying to construct something that is very, very, very complex, and they're doing it in an atmosphere of people offering, number one, lies. Lies perpetrated by the insurance industry as well as the pharmaceutical industry, and lots and lots and lots of pressure, it becomes difficult to craft something that works for everyone. And I would just also like to say just one last thing. I really, really think that single payer is simple, and it's one of the things that just did not get, one of the reforms that did not get the attention that it should. Something like Ryan's plan, it gets all this attention, but it's terrible when you have these other plans that are perhaps politically difficult to make happen, but work and have been proven to work.
John, I appreciate your call. Let me take it to Dr. Tim Johnson. I mean, on the one hand, single payer, that's your ultimate vision, Dr. Tim, as I read you here. Not, you don't think it's practical to get there anytime soon, but I guess you would if you could, but Republicans are by no means going there.
Yeah, I hate to use the word vision because I don't think it's perfect, and there are a lot of problems with Medicare right now that we need to change. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I think we'll be forced in that direction because it's a way of getting control of the financial pipeline. It's all in one place. The government controls the flow. That's why it's called a single payer. So I think we'll end up with that by default at
some
point.
Whether any politician stands up for it, when we're going bankrupt on health care costs, we'll fall into the arms of something like Medicare for everyone.
I think that's what's coming, quite frankly, unless we are able to reform the system. And just so I get it on the record, there are four things that I think are essential to reform.
Mm-hmm.
Four elements. One is to change the payment system from fee-for-service to paying for results and outcomes. Very complicated. We've got to change the culture.
So
but unless we
doctors don't have an incentive to lay on treatments that may not be effective.
Exactly.
Okay?
Or hospitals or others.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is we've got to have a national IT system whereby electronic records can be transferable from one person to another, from one place to another, one state to another.
So wherever you walk in, they know what's up.
They know what's up. So we don't waste all the money we now do because we don't have good records. The third element, once we get that kind of a system in place, is to have comparative outcomes data. In other words, studies, data that show us what works, what doesn't, what's better than what else is out there.
Mm-hmm.
What's cost effective is another way of putting
it.
And finally, to make it all work, you have to have increasing primary care. That is, people in places where we can all go for our initial care and a place where we will be followed for our lifetime, presumably, where we'll be given prescription advice and immunization advice. And this means something called the medical home. That's the lingo of the day. 24/7 place, at least by phone, where there are primary care doctors, physician assistants, nurse practitioners. They're the ones that make all of this work because they're the ones who can give you the information, talk to you about the information that helps us make wise choices.
John McCain, during his campaign, John Boehner is now saying we need to roll back on this health care reform. John McCain paid a lot of attention to letting Americans buy insurance across state lines. He said, let competition roll here, and that will bring more effective care. What about it? I mean, Americans have historically had a big faith in free markets to solve problems.
It'll certainly, I think, bring cheaper care, and the way it'll be cheaper is that insurance companies will cut back on provisions, and you won't really know that until you get sick and find out. So I hold up this model, Tom, for people to think about. There's an industry in this country that is intensely competitive, very private, but under the strict regulation of the federal government to the benefit of all of us, and that is the airline industry. So aren't we glad that the federal government insists on certain basic safety standards for recertifying pilots, reinspecting planes, that we don't leave that up to each state? What if you flew into a state and you had no idea what the requirements were? That's why there are so few fatalities in that industry and why in the healthcare industry we have 100,000 deaths every year from medical errors because we don't have that kind of federal regulation and framework. So I would propose a model where there is federal framework enforcing these kinds of very basic safety rules, for example, but within that framework, allow intense competition between the companies for their service to us, a sort of side-by-side government-private, public-private system.
Would the insurance companies go along with this, or is this going to get the cry, government takeover?
Oh, they'll try to fight it, absolutely. Most of them, not all of them. There are some enlightened people in the private insurance industry. But I think it's going to come, again, to a cost crisis point where we're going to have to do something, and that would be another way to go versus a single-payer system. Germany does it, for example, that way. They have a very firm federal framework within which the private insurance companies compete.
Amanda in Davenport, Iowa. Amanda, you're on the air with Dr. Tim.
Hi. I wanted to talk about the insurance mandate. I know a lot of people were excited about the health care bill. I know that they were, you know, looking forward to having it through and everything like that, but now they're just, you know, irritated that they're mandating insurance and now they're not supporting it at all. Any ideas on that?
Mandating, in other words, of course, that mandating that you must have it. You've got to have insurance. What about it, Tim Johnson?
I favor that for two reasons. First of all insurance experts know that the wider you spread the base, the risk, the lower the cost for everybody. And so the whole idea of insurance is to take the young and healthy and have them help pay for the old and sick because they too someday will be old and sick. And when they get sick as young people without insurance, they expect to be taken care of. I mean, they don't say, well, I didn't pay for my insurance or I didn't want insurance, so I can't get care. They go to the emergency room and we will take care of them. It's the fair thing to do.
But this case has been made again and again. And here's Amanda in Iowa saying, you know, that's my problem with it, this mandate.
Well, that's because, again, I think the politicians have been very effective in scaring people and using this language of government takeover. Mm-hmm. Again, this is not government takeover of the actual delivery of health care at all. It really enhances the private insurance system in ways I've described earlier. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the only fair way to go. But I realize it's an emotional issue for people. It's kind of interesting that most people accept having to buy insurance for their automobiles without too much grumbling. But when it comes to health care, it's a big issue. And I think if they stop and think about what it really means, that they're setting up a system that's going to help them as they get older when they really do want to need it, and it's the fair thing to do. It lowers costs for everybody.
Of course, the government takeover, the one that just happened, is in the House by vote of the American people. The Republicans are in charge, and they're saying repeal, repeal.
And I think that's because the American public really doesn't know what's going on, both in terms of the real problems we still face. I mean, somehow Americans have kind of said, oh, somebody will take care of it. I know it's not too good, but it'll get solved. It always does. Not unless we do some really important things.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about health care and health care reform after the power shift in Washington. A victory, big margin of majority in the House of Representatives by Republicans now here the day after those midterm elections was, who may be soon Speaker of the House, John Boehner, talking about the Republican agenda for the next Congress.
The American people are concerned about the government takeover of health care. I think it's important for us to lay the groundwork before we begin to repeal this monstrosity and replace it with common sense reforms that will bring down the cost of health insurance in America.
This monstrosity, common sense reforms. Here's President Obama same day with his kind of sober reading of what happened and what he thinks did not happen on Election Day.
We'd be misreading the election if we thought that the American people want to see us for the next 2 years relitigate arguments that we had over the last 2 years.
Tim Johnson is with me in the studio right now from Washington. We're joined as well by Gail Wilensky. She's an economist, senior fellow at Project Hope. It's an international health foundation. She was an advisor to John McCain's campaign, contributor to the McCain health care plan, ran Medicare and Medicaid programs under President George H.W. Bush. Gail Wilensky, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you. Nice to be with you again.
What do you think is going to happen first in Congress with the health care reforms that have already been passed and signed into law this year? How much of those do you think a Republican House will be able to stop or turn back?
It'll be difficult for the Republican House to effect a lot of change unless the Democratic Senate decides to support some of the measures. For sure, we can expect to see the House proposed legislation that will repeal it. They promised their constituents they would do that. The leadership understands that's not going to go anywhere because of the Democratic Senate, and, of course, the Democratic president would veto it should it get out of the Congress. The more interesting question is, will they try to find areas that they think are particularly egregious as they now exist and attempt to write legislation to change those aspects and get support from the Senate? Or will they basically step back and let what they think is a very flawed bill go forward into 2012 in its very flawed nature? We'll have to wait and see what they decide to do after the first strategy doesn't go anywhere.
President Obama already said last week that he would be willing to talk about some elements of the reform package passed and signed into law earlier this year. Where do you see potential compromise? Plenty of room for conflict. What about compromise, Gail?
There are some areas where there may be some agreements, like this 1099 provision that really isn't health care. It was a way to increase revenues for the IRS, having businessmen have to report all transactions over $600. There might be some areas where Republicans have been particularly interested, introduced in a little more vigor. There's very little about liability reform that was included. That might be an olive branch to try to interest Republicans. At one point, there was a willingness to have people who are above the poverty line that were going to be on Medicaid expansions, those between 100% and 133% of the poverty line, be able to choose insurance through the exchanges rather than be on Medicaid. That might be of some interest to some of the Republicans. How much more in terms of changing some of the provisions that start coming in 2013 and 14 and 15, either side will be willing to take on. We'll have to wait and see.
And since this debate does not seem to be finished, in spite of the fact that things are signed into law, what do you make of Dr. Tim Johnson's view here that perhaps what we need in this country is a German-style government framework, broad framework, like the FAA for aviation, within which private health insurance companies, could compete and offer their programs? What about that kind of framework down the road to avoid a cost crisis in the United States?
Dr. Tim and I have had several conversations on this. We have been colleagues now for many a year. I like some of the ideas he has put out in his new book. I'm actually a much bigger fan of the federal employees benefit model, which members of Congress frequently cite as something I like to support, than I am of the German structure per se. The federal employees plan allows a great variety of health benefits to be offered, from HSAs with their high deductibles to very full covered insurance like the Blue Cross Blue Shield high option plan called the Standard Plan. Some of them are very low cost, like the mail handlers plan, less than half of the cost of the Blue Cross Blue Shield plan, but a lot of variation. The German plan is very regulated, and I think there would be a lot of pushback by the American public to anything nearly as regulatory as the German plan. But I like a lot of his other ideas. I agree we need better information. There are some things that would make sense to have it regulated at the federal level rather than at the state level in terms of some of the safety measures. So there are certainly ideas he raises I agree with. Overall, it's quite a bit more regulatory-minded than I would be comfortable with, but I definitely don't dismiss the issues that he raises.
Tim Johnson, how do you see the fundamental kind of fork in the road between you and Gail Wilensky here? Maybe it reflects the fork in the road that's going to be debated in Washington about the degree of government involvement, how the market should be put in play. She's saying go for the federal employee style, what you call exchanges, I guess, but not German-style oversight of insurance coverage.
And I'd be very happy with that. Excuse me, Tom. I happen to favor the federal employees plan, too. I think it has much better chance of passing politically than the German-style plan. I put it in there as another model, mm-hmm. another idea. Mm-hmm. But if I had to pick between the two for this country, I'd pick the federal employees plan because it's going to be very hard, I think, ultimately, for Congress to say, you can't have what we have. It's worked well for us, but we're not going to let you have it.
They've said it for a long time.
Well, that's because the American public has no idea what they have. And the fact that the new proposal is proposing exchange it very much like the federal plan.
Gail, there's talk of Republicans resisting those exchanges right across the country, state by state, where Republicans now have majorities in state houses. Do you think that the GOP should support those exchanges to get Americans closer to the kind of coverage that Congress has?
The exchanges can be a good idea, and part it'll depend on what the states do. What is going to be offered in the exchanges is more regulated by legislation than the kind of exchange we have for federal employees. Exchanges to me are not bad by their nature. It really depends on how tightly regulated they are. Some of them are likely to be very heavily regulated and offer plans that are much closer to Medicaid. Other states may have them to try to structure the insurance market, but attempt to offer more variety. Governor Daniels was in Washington, and I was part of a small group meeting with him. He's very concerned that the HSA models that they currently have for their low-income uninsured is not going to be allowed in the insurance world as of 2014, very frustrated that something that's working in Indiana may not be able to continue. The same with Utah. So exchanges are not a bad idea as long as they're not too heavily regulated in terms of what can be offered. That's where I think you're going to see pushback from Republican governors.
Let's get our callers in here. Norwich, Connecticut. Bill. Bill, you're on the air.
Hey. Excuse me. Hello, Tim, Tom, and Neil. My comment is I want to see government completely out of health care, as well as a lot of other areas, but let's start with health care. Since obviously they have screwed up health care since Medicare has been instituted. And if you take a look at foreign countries, you were mentioning Germany, England, Canada. If you're wealthy in Canada, where do you go for health care? Typically, you'll come to the United States. Why? Due to the fact that the United States has better care. Why? Because the United States has semi-private care or semi...
Bill, what if you're not wealthy? What if you're one of the 50 million who don't have any coverage or the many more million who can't afford that kind of top coverage?
Is, when we had a total free market in health care prior to Medicare and Medicaid and all this other stuff, okay, people actually were able to afford to go out and get the health insurance they needed and the health care that they needed. I mean, back when we had that, we had doctors that made house calls. We had basically people that actually cared for other people.
Little House on the Prairie, Waltons. No, the perspective that you're voicing is clearly was a perspective that was very evident on voting day last week, Bill, and I'm glad you come in with it. Tim Johnson, what do you say to our caller, Bill?
Well, I would say that healthcare has changed enormously since those days. It's now much more expensive, much more technologically oriented, so it's impossible for all of us, I shouldn't say all, most of us, to pay for health care out of our own pocket. In those days, it was possible. So we've got to have a very different kind of solution to the problem today.
So he'd say, yes, of course you'll have insurance, but get government out of it. Let it just be, you know, private health insurers and American citizens working it out between themselves.
And, of course, that's what we've had for the last 30 years, and people were not happy. They were complaining about the cost. They were complaining that the insurers took away their insurance when they got sick mm-hmm. or wouldn't let them get it if they were sick.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of problems with it, and it took the government to step in and start regulating to prevent some of those abuses.
You write in your ebook that there's a moral issue here. You're not just a doctor. You're an ordained Protestant minister, and you say there's a moral issue. I'm not sure if it would resonate with Bill or not. I don't know, but about getting everybody covered.
Well, I think it's both morally and economically the right thing to do. Morally, I don't think Americans want to let people die in the street because they don't have health insurance. So we do take care of everybody sooner or later. Through the emergency room. If you get sick enough, you get into the emergency room and we'll take care of you. Of course, by that point, it may cost a lot more and be less effective. And from an economic viewpoint, I think if we can do it in the right way with the right reforms, we will actually be able to provide this kind of care to people who don't have insurance earlier on and therefore in a less costly fashion.
Gail Walensky, here's a comment online from Rebecca in Nashville. She says, our healthcare system is like a cancer or a virus, eating itself from within by overcharging its customers. The only real future for healthcare, health insurance, is through nonprofits or government-controlled care. No profits on life and death decisions. Pretty much the opposite of our caller, Bill. Where do you come down and why, Gail?
Well, I think she is also oversimplifying. Most healthcare actually doesn't have anything to do with life and death. Most of our health and well-being is determined by what we regard as the social determinants of health, education, economic opportunities, housing, et cetera. But we need healthcare. We need healthcare when we're sick. Medicare, which controls the prices, it actually doesn't do any better in terms of spending growth rates than the private sector. It's, again, much more complicated than just not-for-profit or for-profit. We need to get better information. We need to get the incentives right. We reward physicians for doing more and more complex procedures. Whether or not that's a way to try to get the best clinical outcome, we've got a liability system that drives institutions and physicians to do more to protect themselves. We can debate how big an effect, but clearly the direction of the effect is very clear. We need to make a lot of changes in terms of how we reimburse and finance healthcare and get better information and try to get the American public to feel like they're more involved in this as well. We know we have an obesity epidemic that is going to drive up future costs in just a major way. If we don't get the American public involved and having them be part of the fix and the cure as well.
Alex in Crozet, Virginia. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty well. What do you see?
This question is more directed towards Tim. He's been talking about the efficiency and the positives of regulating this. But how do you go to a base of people that have coverage? They were either on their parents' insurance and then got a job with insurance and have had insurance their whole life and are very happy with the quality of American healthcare. And really don't really see a problem. How do you convince those people to get behind a health reform bill that will ultimately be positive, but very specifically, so not an economist or a doctor, but a regular person that has insurance, how do you mobilize them to support this bill?
And they may be the swing vote. Dr. Tim?
And I think more and more of them, and I say this because I talk to my colleagues all the time who have good health insurance through ABC, but more and more of those of us who've had that kind of health insurance see our premiums going up, see less coverage, see problems with it. So 10 years ago, I think it would have been very hard to talk to those people. Now it's much easier because they are starting to see what's coming unless we make some changes.
Let's go to Kara in Clarksville, Tennessee. Kara, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say that I support the health care bill. Maybe there are little details that need to be ironed out. But for my family, it makes sense because in 2 years, my husband's getting out of the Army. The free health care ends. and we are nervous because our daughter has a pre-existing heart condition. Is anybody going to cover us?
Gail Walensky, if Republicans have their way in the House of Representatives, will Kara's daughter have coverage?
Yes, because it depends on what kind of job that her husband gets. Also, depends on how long he's in the military. If he was in there for a substantial period of time, he will continue on military health care. But otherwise, if he goes and joins the private workforce, most people don't understand that since 1996, anybody who's part of a plan of two or more people who's had coverage can't be not included or not covered because of pre-existing conditions. But the Republicans have said that many of the insurance reform provisions, per se, are ones that they haven't objected to. As I just said, most of them were included in the HIPAA legislation of 1996, except not for people who buy their own insurance as individuals, a relatively small fraction of the population.
And Dr. Tim,
if the rest of the changes.
Yeah, well, the rest, a lot of changes there. And if Kara's husband comes out of the Army and doesn't have a job, what is about his daughter and their daughter in that case, Dr.
They're going to have trouble unless some of these other programs are in place, or the state programs that take on high-risk people that are trying to be set up now. And I'd point out, Gail's absolutely right about getting insurance in a small business. But in a small business where one of the people in the business gets very sick, then the premiums for the whole little company can go way up under the way it used to be.
Do we have years more of this fight before we get to something that's really workable for this country, Tim Johnson? Where are we headed?
We don't have
We're clearly going to have more fight right now in Washington.
We don't have decades more. We may have years more. But what's going to really get us from the rear and get our attention are the costs going up. That's going to be something that nobody, Democrat, Republican, any of us can ignore. And as I said, if we don't change the cost curve as it is now, that could happen in as little as 7, 8, 9 years.
Dr. Timothy Johnson, you know him from decades on ABC News. He's looking closely and carefully at what we're facing right now as the debate grows again in Washington. His new ebook is The Truth About Getting Sick in America. Tim Johnson, great to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us. And Gail Walensky in Washington at the Project Hope. Gail, thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.